From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Friday's global climate strike is timed to come just ahead of a major United Nations climate meeting. On September 23rd at the UN headquarters in New York City, country representatives will make their pledges to curb carbon emissions. To his credit, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has decided to exclude from presentations those nations building new coal plants, such as Japan, South Korea, and South Africa. Additionally, the US will be left out because of its undermining of the Paris Accord, Brazil because of President Jair Bolsonaro's assault on the Amazon rainforest, and Saudi Arabia for its relentless promotion of petroleum. Swedish teen activist Greta Thunberg will address the UN General Assembly and is leading the New York climate strike. Just days ago, she testified in front of several Senate and House panels alongside American youths about the importance of taking climate action. We go now to Germany to speak with Sven Harmeling, CARE's global policy lead on climate change and resilience. Welcome to the program, Sven.
Thank you very much. Welcome, Matt.
So this issue of climate action, taking climate action, has been met, unfortunately, in the United States by sympathy and a lot of stonewalling, even though they take the message of young activists like Greta Thunberg very seriously. How are politicians in Europe seeing it? Is the U.S. far behind, not just Europe, really the rest of the world when it comes to climate action?
Yeah, I think on the one hand, we can say that Europe has been trying to be a leader in the climate policy space over the last years. There have been a number of policies implemented, some of them more effective than others. But we've generally seen a situation where, let's say, most of the countries, most of the political parties were and are still convinced that this is an extremely serious challenge to tackle. We also see more and more businesses making investments into climate-friendly technologies, pulling out of fossil fuels and so on, not yet at the scale and the, let's say, comprehensiveness that we need, but definitely a lot of things going in the right direction. And I think what we've been observing from the US over the last years is that while there is this, let's say, polarization on the administration and government level under the presidency of Trump, the attempt to pull out of the Paris Agreement, we also see a lot of positive developments, movement in certain states, in businesses, a lot of cities doing action. And I think a lot of these groundswelling movements have also been communicated and conveyed into Europe. For example, 2 years ago, there was the UN Climate Summit COP23 happening in Bonn in Germany, and there were a lot of stakeholders from the US basically attending and also sending the signal the US is still in, and it's not just decided by government. So I think there is generally a mixed picture of climate policy in the US, but also a lot of respect and a lot of, let's say, awareness of the positive forces that are in the US. And as my sense from here is basically observing the US discussion is that, the mood is kind of changing. And I understand that also in latest polls, more and more people understand the challenges and the risks from climate change and want to see action taken.
Right, certainly. Even members of the Republican base here in the United States, a majority understands that climate change is real. Now, the global climate strike on Friday, we won't really know the numbers of how many people marched till a few days after, perhaps. But how significant is the timing of this coming just a few days before the UN climate meeting? Can this send a strong message to leaders of nations around the world, how much desire there is in the grassroots around the world for urgent climate action?
I think it's an extremely important and probably historic moment. Of course, it comes in a kind of, let's say, ladder of activities. There was a global youth strike movement some months ago. And now for this this strike, for this global actions, the intent has been explicitly it's not a task for the youth to save the world, but we are all in it, right? Climate change is something which affects everyone, and we need actions taken everywhere. And I think this message is getting stronger. I've heard some numbers that it seems that globally more than 5,000 events have been registered. In Germany, I know there are activities happening in more than 500 cities. And of course, it's not equally balanced across the entire planet, but I hear from many countries, also countries CARE works in, Uganda, Kenya, that people are participating, are going out on marches. And I think it's a extremely important signal because it shows that youth and people are rising up because they on the one hand feel the impacts of climate change more and more themselves, and they also see that by far not enough is being done. And that makes a link to the UN Climate Summit, which takes place on Monday, 23rd September. That governments who are going to be represented there and who will have the opportunity and will give them the space to talk about their next steps in terms of increasing ambition in climate action, we really see that this is on the one hand where they are not alone and that they are also rewarded if they implement more ambitious measures, but also that they need to see that their electoral base, that the people of the future are not accepting any longer, that we just run into that catastrophe, which is proven by science. Climate change is a fact. It's not a matter of belief. It's not a partisan issue. It's proven by science. And we all know that time is running out to really keep action.
And in fact, that was one of Greta Thunberg's main message when she addressed lawmakers here in the United States, both on a Senate panel and a couple of House committees, where she said, you need to believe the science. Why are you not believing the science? How important has her activism been? She's become a global symbol. I sort of worry about the toll that this might be taking on her. She's only 16 years old, but she has, you know, whether she likes it or not, become this international symbol of youth who are determined to do whatever it takes to save the planet, to save humanity, rather.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an incredible development just over the last year. So I remember that I saw Greta Thunberg briefly. I didn't really meet her, but I saw her at the climate summit in Poland in December. And there was, of course, it all kind of really started to happen. And then the last 6 to 8 months, it really kind of took off. And I think what is great is that she has a particular capability of making strong messages, but in a very simple, fact-based manner so that everyone understands it. But I also think it's clear that she's a kind of the face of the movement, but it's also clear that there are many others. I see it in Germany. There are particular youth faces. In our CARE office, we even had a meeting a couple of days ago with some youth activists, which was quite inspiring. And of course, it creates a lot of debate about the personality of her specifically, but I also feel it has really opened up a lot of space for discussion, not really discussion, but really looking into what's happening here with climate change, climate emergency. There are much more media reports about the scientific facts that are on the table, what needs to be done, what can be done. And I think the fact that this is coming a lot from young people is in a way a new story. I mean, I've also been active in the climate space for 15 years. And of course, sometimes we've been working with young people or with people affected by climate change. But this has brought it up to a new scale, and was just a compelling narrative and movement. I think it really changed the game, and now we need to make everything happen that it translates into actual action on the ground.
What do you make of the impact that Thunberg had, not on activists here in the United States, but on lawmakers, members of Congress? There was one Democrat, Tom Carper, who was a senator who was at the Senate Climate Change Task Force that she addressed, whose response to Greta Thunberg and the other young American climate justice activists was that eventually they would be old enough to run for office and could make change themselves. That seemed to not be the right message that one would have, and I think Greta herself would not have wanted that to be the message that he got.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, of course, that I can only observe the situation a little bit from afar, but I've watched some of the news reports and even some of the video recordings of some of those meetings. I think the reason why youth is engaging is also that many say, well, when we might be able to be in office, then we have lost another 10 to 20 years. And the scientific facts are so clear that action needs to happen really at a totally different scale than so far in the next 5 to 10 years. That's clear. And so a decent response I would expect from decision makers, from people in the Senate, in parliaments, etc., is that they really look into the science, look into the possibilities also of creating change, and then really, let's say, pull their heads together and get the legislation that can work under different circumstances into place, and not tell people, well, you can take care of that when you're in office in 10 or 20 years. And I think in the year 2019, a decision maker or a person in a public office who doesn't understand climate change or doesn't take it serious disqualifies him or herself for such an office.
Senator Ed Markey, who is the co-sponsor of the Green New Deal resolution in the United States, explained, which I think is unfortunately a reality, political reality here in the U.S., that as long as you have Republicans in charge of our Senate here, we're not going to see any movement on climate change. Our Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has not just refused to consider the Green New Deal resolution, but he and his fellow Republicans and the president have denounced it as socialism, have demonstrated a profound misunderstanding, I think deliberately, on what the Green New Deal entails. Our president likes to make fun of wind energy, saying that if the windmill stops, your TV will turn off. And that sort of ignorance, unfortunately, is taken very seriously among his base. Well, let's turn to the United Nations meeting on Monday. What exactly is expected to take place at the General Assembly? This is not one of the COP meetings, I understand, right?
No, exactly. The so-called COPs, these are annual meetings where usually ministers come together, conference of parties, exactly, where ministers come together and where they really negotiate outcomes, which you can call certain level of international law. And the difference here with this summit is that it's basically targeting leaders. Leaders means presidents, heads of states and governments. And the rationale for the summit is basically that these political highest levels need to be engaged, and in particular from the perspective that we see a glaring gap between the action that is actually needed, needed from a scientific perspective, but also to fully implement the Paris Agreement on climate change, which has been ratified by more than 180 countries, and the plans that are currently on the table, the promises have been made by national governments. So there's a big gap, what we call an ambition gap. And a lot of more action needs to happen. And the idea of the summit was basically, well, let's invite countries to bring ideas for new plans, new actions on the table. But I think the Secretary General has been very bold. Usually at these UN summits, everyone gets the right to speak. And he set the bar very high and said, the time, we cannot waste time with just speeches. We need to have actions. And so there was a sort of selection process that the countries had to submit what they intend to present. And so in the end, it's like, I think, 63 countries presenting next week. And we and many other organizations will very closely look at the announcements and what's behind that and whether they really make a difference. And then it's also up to the national level organizations to hold them accountable. And then the second level is also that there will be a number of action initiatives presented in different areas in dealing with climate disasters, in energy transition, in sustainable cities and so on. And a lot of this is not yet known in terms of what exact initiatives we presented. It will not only be new initiatives, but also existing ones which are supposed to be scaled up. So let's say in a perfect case, we get a lot of strong signals and also announcements that much more action is going to be taken. But the experience is, of course, also that one really needs to look at some of the details of those and how serious they are. But we have to see it in the longer trajectory of changes we now need to accelerate, because otherwise time is really running out.
So going back to what you were saying, Antonio Guterres, the UN Secretary General's approach to this particular climate meeting has been quite different. He set the bar high. The UN, at least General Assembly, is demanding, or the Secretary General, the leadership of the UN, is demanding a high standard. It's not a partisan issue or an issue of left or right for the rest of the world, as it unfortunately is here in the US and in some other countries. How significant is the fact that he is leaving, he's not allowing the US has essentially been excluded, right? The US has been excluded because of the Paris Accord. Brazil, which is a huge economy, has been excluded. Saudi Arabia, which is a big contributor in terms of global economic output. He has left out these three countries, and these three, especially US and Saudi Arabia, have traditionally been actively pushing against climate action at a lot of these traditional climate meetings. So in a way, has his decision been to deliberately ensure that they don't meddle in the process?
Well, I think one can say that they had the opportunity, but of course their leaders, to some extent they had the opportunity. I don't know whether Saudi Arabia, for example, submitted anything, and then the Secretary General's team came to the conclusion, sorry, this is just not, by any means, not good enough. I don't know. I can imagine the US may not have been submitted anything. We don't know. But I think it's generally the right approach at this point in time. We have the Paris Agreement as a global accord. We have many national plans, but we have a few, and it's really a few leaders only, who have, let's say, stepped out of that or are in the process of stepping out of that, and are kind of ignoring the signs, are ignoring global consensus. And why should they then be rewarded with holding a speech where maybe, let's say, some information may be presented which is completely inaccurate to what certain countries are doing? And why don't it's better to focus on those who are, let's say, on the right side of history. And I think we always supported this approach by the Secretary General. We heard that there was a lot of political pressure even in the last days from various sides. But I think it's really the right signal at this point in time.
Will there be discussion, as far as you understand, not just on the action that's needed to mitigate the worst impacts of climate disaster, so transitioning to renewable energy, but also adaptation, resilience, and most importantly, this is an issue that has stymied a lot of international discussions, funding for climate refugees, for resettlement of those people whose communities are devastated. I mean, look at what's happened in the Bahamas. Those really should be seen as climate refugees. Is there going to be a broad enough discussion at the UN General Assembly?
In general, I would say yes, or I would say that all of these issues will come on the table, but not in a way that there's going to be any negotiated outcome. I expect that many countries, in particular those especially affected, like you mentioned, Bahamas, and I think they have a speaking slot. There are other island states, there are least developed countries from Africa, and I'm pretty sure that they will raise also the challenges that climate change creates in the countries, the losses they face from droughts, etc.
So it's more of a show and tell of what countries are doing and how they're going to be meeting their pledges?
I think that's one element, but there's also there's a number of so-called action tracks, and this is relating to initiatives I mentioned earlier. And there's, for example, one specific action track on adaptation and resilience, which was led by certain governments, the UK, Egypt, and some others, Bangladesh involved, and where, as far as I know, at this stage, a number of initiatives, adaptation initiatives in Africa, for example, with the LDCs, also about smallholder farmers, will be presented, and where there will also be discussion how to better scale them up. There is also an action track on finance. It seems that this has been one of the most difficult and controversial ones, and it's still not really clear what they're going to present. So unfortunately, I don't expect large outcomes in terms of finance. I think one has to be very clear that there's an absolute need for larger financial support, in particular for vulnerable countries. They are entitled to it. They are facing impacts that they haven't caused. we in the most positive case, maybe we will see a number of new announcements of finance from developed countries, for example, to scale up support for the Green Climate Fund. And then there might be some further initiatives which maybe, let's say, put new processes in place to see where additional finance come from. Ideally, we would also see a push for new innovative sources which can, for example, generate resources from the fossil fuel industry and from others who have basically caused the problem. I'm not too optimistic about that, but I think it's an issue which needs to be kept on the table.
Finally, Sven, how is the rest of the world? Just I'm wondering if you can end with giving us that international perspective on what is happening in the United States regarding the issue of climate change. The U.S. has the, if you look at all of the contribution to the atmospheric carbon through history, the U.S. has had the biggest contribution and has not taken nearly enough proportional action. And our president likes to claim that China is doing all the polluting and not the U.S. Our per capita carbon production is incredibly high as well. And I imagine that the rest of the world doesn't really want to wait around for the U.S. or doesn't feel like it needs to wait around for the U.S. to get its act, for us here in the U.S. to get our act together. We've got an election next year. And then we may or may not get somebody who's going to maybe return the U.S. to the Paris Accord. How terribly are we viewed in the rest of the world?
I mean, as I said a bit earlier in the interview, I think many are aware that you cannot look at the U.S. as one. And that's maybe even the case for many other countries, that there are a lot of positive developments, a lot of strong forces who don't want to accept, let's say, a government position which denies the science and which turns the back on international agreements. I want to state out that technically the U.S. is still in the Paris Agreement. It depends a little bit whether Trump triggers at the end of this year the official process of stepping out. We don't know yet. Maybe this can be avoided with a lot of political pressure. But I think that the two elements here, I think all countries know we cannot wait for the U.S. government. There's just no time to you know, just stop the global efforts because one government is not following, and the people's movements last longer than the government. On the other hand, of course, it's clear that the U.S. is still it's a massive economic power. We've seen in the past that the choreography when Obama and the Chinese, for example, collectively and coordinated put out their plans and national commitments, it was also impactful. And so I think in a way we hope that the next 1-2 years can be transitioned into a situation where the U.S. is coming back maybe into the climate process much more strongly. But as I said, we cannot afford to just wait for that. So others have to move ahead. We have a lot of small countries who do a lot. And we're also hopeful to get to push the EU to become more ambitious as well and hopefully also move others around.
Well, Sven, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Give out a website where people can find out more about the work you do.
Yeah, our website is basically www.careclimatechange.org, where you find a lot of information on our work in developing countries, our policy positions, and please attend it.
And we'll post a link to that from our website. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
My guest has been Sven Harmeling. He is the Global Policy Lead on Climate Change and Resilience with CARE International. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.